because many some of these talked yesterday. Today we will kind of make the next step. And for this, I think it's a good thing that we're not too many, because I would love this to be a little bit of a seminar. If you have questions, chime right in. If you have any, you feel like anything was glossed over too fast, I'm happy to step back and explain this, because in the end, we want to try to make a step forward in the development of this whole thing together. So that I'm not just going to be reporting on where we are, but hopefully trying to find out what might make sense for the next step. However, getting started, I would like to just, for the benefit of those who haven't been there yesterday or have never heard about the project before, like to start at the top, give you a little bit of a presentation, walk you through what Nexon is, and what the vision behind the whole thing is. We have a situation right now where we're at a phase where Nick Szabo even says that smart contracts are not necessarily meant to be contracts. They have a different focus, or at least that was the focus in the beginning that he had. And now that we're coming to a point where we are in a more mature environment than we had before, we should also be exact about what smart contracts actually are, what they should be used for. And we have Vitalik on record, who's basically saying, well, I kind of regret I haven't called them smart contracts. Maybe we should have just called them stored procedures, something like that, and Vlad actually chimed in. I'm actually happy to take out the mantle that they are dropping, where they're saying, okay, maybe smart contract was not such a good name for it, and explore what is possible actually with programs that are running on the blockchain and have certain features. And get into the mood. I hope I will be able to switch. Notoriously difficult to switch out of these presentations, I'm sorry. Start out, what I think is a bigger discussion here than maybe even just a discussion of blockchain and smart contracts. And to set the tone a little bit, I would like to try to give you a video presentation, but it won't have any problem. Sound system here, but we'll do it for you. Because we don't have sound, maybe I don't sing to it, but I can explain a little bit what the thoughts are. Obviously, the human brain, we have 16 billion cores just in our front room, and they're all working in parallel, right? So what we have now, even if we look at depending on how you count, how many nodes, how many full nodes there actually are in the blockchain world, in Ethereum, out in Bitcoin, it's something that of course has nothing to do in scale with what's going on in the real world. And the biggest computers at this point have 10 million cores. And that's actually only the most... Hey, hello. Come in. That's the most advanced computer, right? 10 million cores, 16 billion. And every single brain on the planet, 7 billion times. So we have to ask how much power we want to decide and what we can expect from artificial intelligence or from blockchain programs or whatever it is. The more so, the more we allow them to start becoming forces that rule our lives, or at least become a pretty big part of what our lives are. And of course, we have to ask where this all goes, right? Hey, hello. Great to see you guys. Cool. Good to see you guys. So I think where this actually is going is this tool that has its start, no doubt, on the blockchain, might be the tool that we will need for taking in the robotic world. That's something everybody knows from Asimo. Where we will have to find a way as a society to talk about and then also to make laws about what robots, specifically autonomous robots, should be allowed to do. And this is something that also, like, if we go beyond the bubble that we are all in here, right? I mean, it's wonderful to see all these familiar faces and so on, but there are a lot of people who care about things, and they do care about these kind of things now. That we're not maybe on the forefront of everybody's thinking when Ethereum started, but meanwhile, Facebook is not really considered a force for good anymore. Nobody's laughing anymore when Google says, do no evil. Do you guys even remember? What's the motto, right? But I had this awesome conversation yesterday about the difference in what is going on in the illegal, and how important it might be to have illegal concepts and forces in the blockchain world. And I was finding that actually it's a perpendicular, it's not really the same dimension that we're talking about. Lexon is not really about trying to be an alternative or do something else or then ALU. Lexon is just proposing something else. But here's something I learned when I was in the army. The rules are actually protecting the weak. And the more you might feel like you don't need no rules and you're just being hampered by rules, well, maybe it just means you're pretty strong. But I think one of my favorite is that when we talk about society, I don't see a 1% problem. I see a 10% problem. And that is the 10% that most of us are in, who don't have much contact with 90%, who are not as privileged as we are. And that probably means every single person here in this room. So yeah, code is law. Maybe the powerful are laughing about it, right? It's becoming interesting, and nuances in that. I mean, for me, like the DAO, the interesting thing with the DAO was it actually it was coded law, right? And then the code had a bug, and then all of a sudden you didn't only have a DAO's code, code is law, the spirit of law, the spirit of a contract, but all of a sudden you had the spirit of the code. Because that was what the DAO was actually meant to do, but didn't. But everybody understood what that was, right? And so the decision was about, okay, so if we now try to divine what the spirit of the code had been, and yes, obviously that happened, right? So it was hard for it to make the bug go away and make the spirit of the code be the code, which is an interesting way of how to solve mushrooms into more and more complex ways to look at this whole problem of hard to read or hard to debug smart contracts. Now, the premise for Lexon obviously was that, well, we don't do accounting like with bits and bytes, right? Just because the computer knows only bits and bytes, that's not how we do accounting. Because we know it's difficult, you can't have a bug in that. And so we have created languages and we have created programs that can do it better. And so this is Lexon now. This is a program, and that's the point, right? It has actually gone further than I thought in the beginning possible, because I thought you will always have to make some compromises. You will have to explain to people that a colon has a very specific meaning in this context. But actually it's been Brian Fox who pushed me into optimizing it on the readability side. And now I would say, I mean, to me, this is like really zero learning curve. And this is where we are right now, where you can say, okay, anybody can read this and understand what this is supposed to mean. And that is the point, because you can also compile it, put it on the blockchain and the smart contract, and it runs. And it took a bit to get there. It also is not quite clear how far it will actually get, so there's still research going on. It's a long road to understand how long do they need it, how they want it, what makes it be a contract to them. Although there's other stuff where naively looking at this, people who are not in the legal profession might doubt whether this is actually a contract. But lawyers will usually tell you, yeah, that's absolutely a contract, because it's not about the beauty of the language for something to be a contract. But a contract is not thrown out of the door because it's not grammatically 100% correct or stuff like this, right? So, and what I would like to get at today is, whether this could work, right? Because why stop with English? Next Sunday is a big exercise in democratization, and actually I'm really trying hard to disintermediate programmers. Every good engineer does that, trying to make themselves super clues. And Vitalik has actually told me that, I think it was explicit, that he wanted to empower programmers. That was the objective for Ethereum. And I'm curious how far we can push this, and how far beyond being a tool for programmers is this, but I'm also curious how far we can push it, how far beyond English we can take this. And I hope to go away here with a learning about how, if it's possible at all, right? And what the challenges are, particularly with Japanese law, Japanese language. So, on the side, if I get too slow, you can like, say stuff that you've heard before. You can also play around, it's online right now, and I'm going to give you a live presentation, just because that's usually giving a good impression of what we're talking about here, and what you can do, just get a feel for that. You can also go there, it's on Nexon.tech, and the newest version actually is just going to speed.nexon.tech. I have no idea, of course, as always, we have programmed to the last minute, literally, to get everything up to date. And as powerful as possible. I cannot show everything of it. What is going on there is basically on the left-hand side, you see Lexon, you see the code, the human readable code, and while you're writing it on the right-hand side, you can get Solidity or, actually, yeah, that's Solidity, no. Yeah, that's Solidity. We also have a tab now for Sophia, which is another blockchain, Eternity, very good technology in my view. Who are also going to be a target platform for what Nexon does. And you can see, so there's a lot of work cut out for us. At the moment we're trying a lot of things to understand what the focus is going to be going forward. I would just like to, without further ado, try to lose the focus again. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. If anybody has a tip for me, how you can switch back out of the full screen's presentation to other stuff without embarrassing yourself, might be.
What are the four tabs?
Teach me afterwards. Yeah, and it just takes a minute and then you can find yourself there. So. You're going to see some Solidity popping up, and I'm going to explain a little bit on the slide
how a lexon contract works. So it always starts with the keyword lex. And also that is part of the debate about what it actually should that keyword be like this. So even that is a further discussion, right, in this quest to try to make something that is going to be acceptable to judges in the end, and that works for noise and friends. For now, that's cool. Like, it always starts with lex, and then it has a name, and this name is basically there for managing the filing, but also on the blockchain, you could have a pointer to what actually the address is that you want to get at when you actually want to interact with that contract.
Can you blow up the view? Can you blow up the font size? Excellent. Thank you.
So then I have the ability to make definitions. And that is something that is actually something Eliza used to. You have at the head of our contract very often a section that is explaining very much what the individual names in the contract mean. And what you see on the right-hand side is how basically it's building on the fly, it's building solidity. And for the technical, this is WebAssembly running in the browser, so the compiler itself translates WebAssembly, it's all loaded in the browser, that's why it's nice and fast. It's also pointing towards what else it's going to do, because there are blockchains out there like Infinity or also Pocket and such thing. That is going to be a WebAssembly play where, of course, we're talking about having a substrate blockchain that has a virtual machine running Lexon, or programmed in Rust. So that's where we are with that. So now we have definitions up there. We have this head, we have the definitions, and these definitions also, right? We're talking about how this can be done in a way so that it's more like a template than Lois actually used to. For now, this is how it works. Now we say, in this example, we have the payer is setting everything up. And the logic is that if they're just not going to pay all, right? They're just not going to enter this contract. So the payer basically, first the payer pays something, pays an amount into an escrow, appoints the arbiter, also appoints the payee, and how I like to observe. I mean, this is really already where a smart contract is more powerful than a situation as we're used to how it's done, because this means nobody can run away with the money, right? Money, because of how we will program the rest, is just going to be going to the payee, but never to the arbiter. So the arbiter is not going to be able to just run away with it. And also fixes the fee. And this is basically the recitals. So this sets up the situation, this is what happens when the contract actually is set in motion, when it comes to instance of a contract, because what we're doing here obviously is the cookie cutter for a lot of different contracts that you could imagine where you have different peers, different payees, and so on. But always when this contract becomes an actual contract, this is the first thing that happens on the blockchain, but also, so to say, in the real world. And now, the main functionality of this contract is basically a payout, right? So we want to be able to say that the arbiter is the one who also earned the fee. Now you're done, yes, right? And I will not go into this now, but we can now deploy some blockchain using that button down there. It's, we'll go to Ethereum Robson. On the back end, we're compiling this solidity as we compile. We put it on the blockchain. We would be using MetaMask. And so you basically have control over who is going to be allowed to do what. The very powerful thing that we have here is that we can parse, because we have the information that is happening during the translation process, we can use that and create the interface, how to interact with this contract. So that we can have an interface where basically we're using the information that the arbiter may do something and nobody else may do something, to know that the button that is going to be created for the payout functionality should only be shown when it's the arbiter who's logged in using his MetaMask, right? So, and this goes on. This is like you can take the anti-clause of the auditor, of the payout, as a description for that button. Because this source code is like the perfectly self-commenting source code. It doesn't go beyond that, right? The command and the source is the same thing. So what you end up is you have a lot more powerful way to create a generic interface to actually then interact with these contracts. And that is all because the entire process of translating a Lexan contract, of compiling it into Solidity, is happening on a higher level than what usual programming does. I've written about this, there's a paper I'm happy to share, that is arguing that because Lexan stays on a higher level, like closer to human language, it really has a structure like subjects, objects, and verbs, which is a really different concern in those structures that are used to translate that into something else than what you usually have in a program language. Usually in a program language you have a tree that has the logic of, as you can see on the right hand side actually, you have stuff where message.sender, so you have message and your sender and then stop operator, and that's dereference because message is an object and sender is an element in the object and so on. And that's what internally the compiler is concerned with that translates Solidity. Well, the compiler that's concerned with translating Lexan actually is talking about the payer, pays, and amount. And that is actually what the business logic is, what we think about.
Please. So, is there a reason why you wrote the arbiter may pay from an escrow without including the if? I mean, if some condition happens, the conditional? Because it's starting to create a conditional, I think, but you don't actually have it specified. Would you have to then later on add a conditional of what when it would execute?
Okay, thank you for that question, because to clarify, these are the recitals, right? They are, are you a programmer?
Oh, I dabble.
So they're basically the constructor, right? They are what is executed the moment that you say, okay, now I want to make this a real contract. Now I'm going to say, who is the payer? What's the name? What's the street address? What's the blockchain address? So it becomes one real instance of one contract. And at that moment, the recitals are basically being executed, and that is that line. Which means like, which means that you basically can, when you want, you can use that for other contracts too, because it might be a very generic code that you have created. But the recitals are basically what have to happen the moment that it becomes one concrete contract. And this is why it's not really an if. The if, of course, is part of this. Okay, if you want to make this a real contract, do this. But that's outside the realm of programming or a contract. It's just a contract that happens. But yeah, we know we can step and enter into this contract. But then to enter this contract, what has to happen is this. So the may, though, in the payout, that is much more of a condition, and it's actually what it actually is a condition for it's access control, basically, right? Who is allowed to even go and execute this function from the vantage point of the smart contract of the program, but also who is even having this option, like on the legal side, when you look at it as a legal contract, and that's something actually we have had a lot of discussions about, because it's different, right? A smart contract works with incentives. A smart contract cannot go beyond the blockchain and try to enforce something that didn't happen just because you wrote in the contract somebody shall, or must, or should. So to really articulate contracts that make sense to put on the blockchain, you would pretty often try to reverse the logic of a normal legal contract that would usually just say, okay, you have to must do this or that, or given that this is fulfilled, then this should happen. In this case, you just give the option. And hopefully, the fee was high enough that the arbiter is feeling incentivized to actually do what they may do. But if they don't, then this contract actually is not saying that the arbiter is not going to jail or whatever, it's being punished. But it's just, nothing's going to happen. And that is also how a blockchain contract works. Of course, you can now create a stake, right? You could create a version of this contract where you say, okay, the operator first has to pay in a stake. So we are sure that they're going to lose money if they don't act as we want them to act, right? So it's a whole different deal. And yes, of course, you could totally do this. It was a good example for next steps, so to say. Yeah?
What is the Lexon manager?
So yeah, that's where I wanted to... let me real quick go one step back, and then I'll go one step forward. So I wanted to show that it's pretty easy to go and extend Lexon programs, right? Using Lexon in practice is going to be a lot about having templates and learning from those templates to extend them and to adapt them to what you really want. So as an exercise, if somebody feels courageous, I just copy-paste it. Obviously, the compiler doesn't like it. What would I have to change now in this second clause, where it says payout again, to make this, well, basically, an opportunity for the operator to also decide to give the money back to the payer? Because let's say in the real world, the business didn't happen as it was planned, so nobody, well, few people in this room ever programmed Lexon. But I'm sure you can still tell me just intuitively what I have to change. And it's really just common sense, right? So what's wrong there? You just think English. What has to change in the second clause?
What's your equivalent to a Boolean? You need to declare some sort of Boolean and then say dependent on that.
Well, listening to you, you sound a lot like a programmer. Maybe you think like a lawyer or
decision.
change the name to payback instead of payout.
Take that.
We have a different name. Instead of being to themselves, it would be to the payer.
Like this?
May pay from escrow to payer?
So just themselves and then payee becomes payer.
Yeah, I take that one.
Oh, okay.
Right. So that's all it takes.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, whatever. Obviously, it's pretty much based on common sense. And thank you, Matt, for basically demonstrating that Lexon is not easy for programmers. I must say, I mean, I'm good with that now, but neither lawyers nor programmers really love this. I'm pretty happy that somebody very early on of a very well-known law firm in the blockchain space told me, yeah, lawyers don't like it, but their bosses are going to make them use it. And likewise with programmers. Programmers think this is verbose, this is too complicated. We're quite happy with our curly braces and colons and semicolons and so on, right? Makes sense to us. There's by definition not really a need for a language for non-programmers, for programmers, because they're not non-programmers. So,
I was just thinking, is there a way or an idea to do it the other way around, from Solidity to Lexon?
Yeah, thank you. That's a very interesting question. So, and this question comes up because a lot of people have a lot of investment in Solidity contracts, and it makes a lot of sense to think about that. But it does highlight what the difference is between Lexon and Solidity. The thing is that, of course, all the information that you have on the left-hand side is on the right-hand side somehow, but it has been baked down to a level that mixes this with other stuff that is part of what you also have to do in Solidity, so worse, like external, right? Or, like address bracket this, closing bracket dot balance is what you actually have to write if you want to, that money that is there in that contract, right? You can't just write escrow or something, but you have to write the business, and it's fine. That's how it belongs in Solidity, however, you would be hard-pressed to find a way to look back at what the actual business logic was and what is the requirements that the language just asks for you, because it just has to happen. Obviously, you're able to guess it or know it in this translation process to Solidity. You get lost there. There's this higher level, the clarity of the higher level of the information that I was referring to, that Lexon is dealing in objects and subjects and verbs, actually, really. And to get that back out of Solidity, you'd have a very hard time. I'm guessing it would be possible, but it would be easier to just write rewrite the stuff in SQL. Something that also actually is sometimes happening when I make a mistake when writing a Lexon contract. People catch me because like if you're a mistake I usually do I just hate it. I don't like manipulation, so I'm not really good at faking it, but sometimes I write this, right? I wrote person three times, so I write he's a person. And of course the audience always catches me. And last time I did it, they actually proposed I should write him out. Yes. So they even guessed the language right. Right? Because it's so simple. But what I found interesting as a programmer is that actually people now can catch errors in the program using their normal language sample. If it doesn't read right in English, it's probably a bug. Mm-hmm. That's pretty powerful. Because even as programmers, our language center, we use that all the time, right? So that's really, I mean, it just jumps at you. You don't think about language or about English or anything. You just have a feel, oh, it doesn't read right. And on the right-hand side, right, if I would, whatever it is, I'm gonna see if I write them out back here, on the right-hand side, it's a UID. That's exactly the stuff you have to look up if, as a programmer, you know a lot of different languages. Because that's slightly different every next language. Sometimes it's a UN, sometimes as you found out it's unsigned. Sometimes it doesn't even exist, it's just integer written out. But, it's always the same. You know exactly what it is, it just has different names and different languages. And you cannot, as a layman, criticize or jump in and say, oh, that's probably a mistake. If I write something else other than UN, or if I write UN, you have no opinion about whether that's right or wrong. So that's a very interesting side effect that I found. That was certainly not intended, but this kind of stuff keeps coming up. This different way of writing programs. So going. I wanted to. I don't know what happens because I just changed the program on the. So while it's loading or not, I would like to use our time. Yeah, basically rushing through a number of thoughts. In the beginning, basically, what my first idea was really like, if smart contracts have this magical new feature that they can transfer money, right? That's really new. As a programmer, there's a lot of ways that you have a magic feeling for stuff that you create, but actually now all of a sudden you can transfer money, that's a really new thing, right? So the idea was, to quite some degree, and now programs can shift the session. You can still sue them. And if a business is asked to bank on smart contract and use smart contracts for something serious, they will ask that question, and they do. Like what happens if I get sued over the smart contract because somebody doesn't agree with what it does. So the idea is simply, okay, if the smart contract reads like a contract and I can show it to a judge, then I take out the incentive for anybody to sue me. Because hopefully that contract is going to say exactly what happens on the blockchain, and then the judge is just going to shrug their shoulders and say, well, what do you want, right? So people will not even go to court. And that actually just makes the contract even more powerful. And there it goes kind of back full circle in a way where it's not so much about illegal or not illegal. This is also, in a way, making the contracts more powerful. And on the side, I'm with you in a second. And on the side, it's also making it possible to, within a company, to have this verification process, go full circle, to have business people wanted something, contracting with another company, and then lawyers wanted to achieve something so the whole thing is compliant and really in the interest of the company. They all can verify now, they all can chime in on what's happening. And they also, and it also ropes in the users or small businesses that might not have a blockchain department. They can read those smart contracts themselves. So in the end, it's also It's also taking on a current way that business models work in the blockchain world, where basically a startup is formed around a complex smart contract that is very generic and is going to, or is supposed to, work in very different situations. And then basically the startup is a provider of the service that is created around the smart contract. Lexon is very much democratizing that too, in the sense that hopefully writing a bespoke Lexon contract that does exactly what you want, becomes so easy that you will not need these new startups, right? So that's another, I think, important aspect. What's the motivation behind this? You had a question, sorry.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, smart contract is just sitting on a blockchain. Anyone can interact with it through Geth or whatever. How is one put on notice that they are dealing with a smart contract that came from a Lexon legal contract, such that their interaction with the smart contract is, you know, basically indicating their consent to be bound by that legal contract?
Ah, that's a very good question, thank you. So, the situation that is right now, right, is that usually you do not even have a chance to understand what the source code was if you don't have the solidity, because it doesn't compare back. So that points towards, at some point, I think it's going to be very important to have a virtual machine of Lexon, where one of the attributes is that you can compile Lexon code onto the blockchain, but you can also decompile it back up. So there cannot be the situation that somebody is asked to interact with this contract, but doesn't have any way of knowing. Blockchain explorers for this kind of virtual machine would have the ability to just press a button and say, yeah, this is actually the code. This is one of the aspects why the way that we show it now, where we compile it to Solidity, and from Solidity we compile it onto Ethereum, is not the last word.
Right.
It works now very well to make people understand that it actually has the full art. But This is one of the, and there's other stuff like reversibility of individual contracts without doing your fork, right? Because judges can change history. They can just say, well, yeah, actually this contract should have never been done, or, well, let's strike this out as if it had never happened, right? And then what do you do? Yes.
Yeah, so I did notice there's certain rules that you're following when you're writing the Lexon thing, like every sentence is ending with a period. Right. When you're defining variables, it's in quotation marks. So there's a certain lexicon that's required in order for you to be able to convert.
Mm-hmm.
Does it flag like you forgot your period for an average person?
Actually, it did that on the side, right? It's not good yet, but we're working to make the compiler be as helpful as possible. Now this is a big topic in programming and editing, right? The Rust compiler really is very advanced in this. It really almost tells you what you should have programmed instead of what you tried to write. There are other compilers of a famous game, C++ also has a long evolution behind it. And this is definitely something from day one that was very important to me, to have error messages that are as good as possible. It's a little bit something of a luxury thing, in the sense that there are a lot of stuff that we have to test out, that we have to de-risk first, whether stuff actually works. And if it works, then you can be pretty sure that with enough work, you will also have this kind of problem. We've been very aware that you want to have as much of context help, like in Eclipse, in Program Java, and auto completion as possible. Yes?
When it comes about parsing complexity, like, do you have like long-term vision? How would you like to direct the evolution of the Lexon? Like, the natural languages have this like contextuality that it's like backwards and forward in the parsing, what makes it like almost impossible task to implement like the proper way of handling this. So do you like to bring maybe this feature of the language that when I have a sentence, it carries on the context from the previous sentences, but maybe you decide to drop on a feature to refer to the future sentences because of some way, or you just leave it now on the side because you would like to focus now on the basic use cases and see how it will evolve. And I'm curious where you stand and what's the current state and what are the next steps.
Yeah, so the basic premise of what doing here is called controlled language. The idea has been around quite a while, actually. And there are even papers that are basically pointing out that this should be possible. We are doing very normal compiler work on the basis of not going forward and proposing a new grammar, but instead going back using an existing grammar, English, in that case, and paring it down to a degree where we can actually parse it and create a AST out of it, an abstract syntax tree, and then do other stuff with it. For example, creating solidity or Sophia and so on. For this, we can, and that's the major premise basically, we basically pare down the possibilities of English to something that still sounds English enough, right? But will not allow you to just go overboard and create arbitrarily complex sentences or even sentences where you decide to arrange words in a very different order than normal stuff like this. Because we have to, and I actually managed to get lost in the screen switching again, but actually there's, in the presentation I have a grammar section where I'm just showing how this looks, how this actual file looks. That has given you, for us as programmers, that contains the information that is going, that is eventually being, so to say, the blueprint of how the computer understands language and what it is looking for, what keywords it's looking for, what kind of patterns it is looking for, to be able to then construct out of that a structure that it allows you to really have a understanding within the computer, so to say, of what the language is. So, and with this, I'm skipping over this here in the interest of time. This is the grammar, actually. So this is a file, just scrolling it through. It's not too long, but this is how you articulate what you actually want. So, for example, we have statements, right? There's a number of statements, and that's the list of what each statement is understanding. Then you have the definition that clause is just, that you see there, it's just a little too fast, but there are certain keywords that you see in quotes, and that's actually the keywords it's understanding, right? And that's exactly what I want to close with. With an open discussion about, is this thinkable for Japanese, right? Is this something where the Japanese grammar is giving you obstacles that you will probably not be able to go through? Or is it worth giving it a step to also create a lexicon that is based on the Japanese language? So, what I was showing earlier, could this work? Right. This is what I'm really stoked about, and I would like those who say that they can speak Japanese to chime in and educate us if they feel that what we do here with English is something that could also work with Japanese. There's no right or wrong. I'm happy to hear opinions and reasons why or why not.
Yeah, hi. I was thinking, because you talked about controlled language, so a couple of things. One is that, did you think about as an inspiration IBM's Easy English, you know, like things like that for technical specifications which are being used? And the other thing is the problems that happen with controlled language, and this is matter of debate in linguistics, which is because it is a natural language control language, if there is later a dispute, can you not go back and claim, it's not my fault, it's the language is like that, I thought I meant it this way, but it was not like that. Like, and because you cannot do it, you know, I was saying, some of the nuances of a natural language, would it not limit the kind of contracts you can write in it?
Well, let me restate my question. What we do with English, do you think we can do this with Japanese? Um,
What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's fairly possible. The grammar
So what do you think, what do you feel the challenges would be in Japanese? This is a major challenge that you will see where you would have more difficulty in parsing Japanese lexicon.
You know, grammatically, Japanese is actually relatively easy, grammatically.
Yeah.
It has very few irregulars. It follows a particular structure. They have these articles, like you have the wa there before the comma. So you can basically kind of use those as anchor points to figure out what the code is going to be. In fact, this has even more specificity than, remember my question earlier about may? May can be permission, but it could also mean the conditional. Which is, for me, first thing that came to mind was conditional, rather than the permission. This is very clear, the permission. The Japanese itself that you're used here, shiharou koto ga dekimasu, that specific Japanese is talking about they have the right to do something.
Right.
And so that level of specificity, as long as the person writing it knows what the rule is, that you have to use this koto ga dekimasu, as long as you're using that, then it could very easily be read in.
Thank you.
Yeah. So eventually, like, one language can be the shining point of all legal coding. Instead of English, everybody codes in Japanese and all their code.
Well, actually, if I remember right, the American jurisprudence was there was a lot of French used in America because people thought it was less ambiguous. And you get better quality at all by articulating it in French. So yes, you could end up finding that certain languages are better than others to articulate law. But that's a huge debate, right? Lawyers will tell you, no. Language has to be ambiguous. You have to be ambiguous with laws. While Nick Szabo is going to tell you, well, that's actually why I invented this term. Because smart contracts was, the whole point about it was to have less ambiguous contracts. Right? So it's a debate.
Yeah, so the only challenge, like for example, this shiharou koto ga dekimasu, that could be written as shiharaimasu with kind of a shorthand version. And so the person who's writing it needs to know they have to adhere to certain things rather than using shorthands.
Yes.
And Japanese also has sometimes combination of two characters, which could be replaced with one character with a longer thing. So like gakshu suru versus narau. So narau means to learn, gakshu means to study. But they both fundamentally mean like the same thing in English. But one is a pairing of two words together. The other one is one separate word with more hiragana with it. So as long as the person typing it knows the rules, you could actually easily convert it. But there's two ways of writing verbs. Sentaku suru versus erabu. To choose something, right? But as long as you know, you should combine it with the two verbs plus something else. Then I think it's very easily convertible.
Okay, so this is super interesting and helpful. I would like to invite everybody to join us on Friday, where we are actually going to have from 2 to 7. It's also on Eventbrite with the off DEFCON event. At the moment it's on waiting list, but please just sign up. But anyway, if you should have time on Friday to continue that debate. And I'd be very interested to find out whether the possibilities that we're hearing about here, what the challenges might actually be.
going forward and going there towards maybe having a node and getting to the point where you you can start having a pilot that has some modest stuff like the contract that I just wrote there, and I was just wrote there, it's not translated yet, but it could be a great starting point. So I'm having trouble convincing my computer doing what it should do. I would like to say thank you, everybody, for coming here. If there are any questions, then I'm happy to answer that. I guess I can be here for another 5 minutes, I think. It was very, very interesting, very, very encouraging to hear that it's actually not completely unlikely to be attached to these two. And yeah, thank you very much.